there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hello and welcome to the 55th episode of The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. Today we are throwing our hands in the towel. No. Today.
Throwing our hands in the towel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Today we're going to throw the towel in the ring and say we can't find movies that are going in the cinemas in Iceland and in Denmark. So therefore, we're going to discuss a cult favorite that, well, you've watched it, Tigby, but yeah. I have never watched it the whole way through. Goodfellas. So that will be an interesting discussion a little bit later. Also, we've been going to the cinema, both of us, but we've seen different kinds of movies. I have watched The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, finally. I can't wait to start talking about this. Yeah. But first, what are you drinking today? Are we in for a surprise?
I don't think so. It's back to basics here. This is like the third running or thing I have. Oh God, is it third or fourth?
Yeah, probably. That's just starting to get a little bit boring.
Yeah,
I think
that's me. Yeah, I guess
a little bit boring.
I was saying to Shep last night that we had a tough week and tough yesterday, and actually she's been sick as well, and so I've been a bit tired, but I told her as long as I can have a whole garden on a Saturday night and watch a movie, I'll be okay.
Okay.
I will be okay. So there you go.
Okay. Well, while you're drinking your tried and true beer there, I'm going to introduce my specialty beer.
Nice.
It's from this brewery out in the forest close to Copenhagen called Skålest. Mm. And this one is a Juniper brew.
Juniper, all right.
And juniper berry brew. And I'm thinking it might be good or maybe not. Kind of fruity.
So you're probably thinking it might be good or not good.
Yes.
That's a safe assumption, I would say.
That's how it always is with these special brews that you don't really know.
Let me hear the pouring there. Come on.
Heard it?
The angle is a bit... Yeah. It's all right.
Not quite. It smells pretty good. It smells very fresh.
Cool.
Very... And it's organic as well. So, I mean, it was the perfect beer, you know?
Well, we'll take a sip first.
Yeah.
And now we wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I'm tasting.
Yeah.
It's inoffensive.
Inoffensive. Yeah. That doesn't sound like the best, the perfect beer.
It's not the perfect beer. It actually doesn't. It's not very sharp in the taste. You know. It's good. It's good. It's it's a 5% beer.
Yeah. Mm.
All right.
Actually, before the show, you told me you had something else in the fridge. So I'm dying for you to open that maybe later. Maybe.
We'll maybe see. Later. If I make it all the way through this one, then maybe.
It's a big one, or it's a small one?
A very small one. It's actually a 33 centiliter.
The juniper thing.
No, the other one. Oh. This one is just half a liter.
Okay.
Yeah. But the other one, small.
Okay.
A Budweiser. Yes.
So, let's go. Let's talk about Don Quixote. You want to say.
Okay, we'll just jump straight right in.
Let's just go straight at it.
All right, so I finally got to watch it. It was, by some stroke of luck, it was part of the Copenhagen Pix Film Festival.
Yeah.
And I managed to go and watch it, and I managed to drag Alien with me to watch it as well. Got a babysitter and all that kind of stuff, and I was excited.
I've just been dying to hear your take on that one, because this film is nowhere to be seen here, and it's Gilliam and it's Adam Driver and it's exciting. Yeah.
It is exciting. Yes. I'm going to situate it a little bit.
Yeah.
It was playing in the Cinematheque, the place in Copenhagen that shows primarily old film.
Yeah.
Which is a great place. And a perfect fitting for Terry Gilliam's weird movie, like a movie that wasn't really supposed to have been made.
Well, it took him long enough to actually get it done.
And, you know, it opens. I'm not going to really spoil anything, I think.
Good.
By talking at length about this movie. But it opens with this line of text saying 25 years in the making, you know. So right off the bat, he's acknowledging that this is something he's been working for a long, long time, right?
So Adam Driver was maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 mm-hmm. when he started.
Something like that. All right. Yes. And you know, I tried to write down what this movie is. I'm just going to try and read this this little quote. It probably doesn't make too much sense, but it's a meta film about a man like Adam Driver, director, who's trying to make Don Quixote, and he is having problems with the producers in order to make this movie. You know, he's having a lot of problems. And also, he has already made this movie as a student film like 10, 15 years ago.
Okay.
So there's that. And since he has made it and he's shooting this other movie, Don Quixote, around the same area, he's trying to seek out the place he recorded the movie.
Yeah.
Back then. And to his surprise, he finds the guy he found to play Don Quixote back then.
Okay. Yeah,
still following?
Yeah.
For some reason, this guy still believes that he is Don Quixote. Because like he was a shoe repairman and he was not a very good actor.
Mm.
But all of a sudden, it snapped for him and he became Don Quixote.
All right.
And now, 15 years later, he's still Don Quixote. But he's just kind of this eccentric guy outside of this little town.
So it's about this making of.
Yes. I mean, that's what it starts out to be. But then it becomes this movie with Adam Driver and the old Don Quixote being lost in, I guess, La Mancha.
Okay. So Adam Driver is Sancho Panza, or?
Yes, not really, but he's being mistaken as him by Don Quixote all the way through, and we get into this weird world where past and present and imagination is entwined.
Mm.
You know, so in the beginning, you kind of know when you see what's what, but just within the first half hour, it's getting increasingly harder to understand what is real, what is not, and what is past and present. Mm. And you know, it's fascinating, but it's also extremely confusing. And sometimes you're thinking, as I said in the beginning, is it really worth pursuing to make this movie for 25 years when...
You mean if this was the story all along? Was this the story all along?
I guess nobody really knows.
Yeah.
It seems very... much like Terry Gilliam's opinions in the beginning, you know, it seems very like pointing at the culprits.
Exactly.
And maybe a little bit like egocentric, you know.
Is it Terry Gilliam-esque, the film itself?
Completely. Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing you realize watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the things that are pretty amazing is the costumes. It is the scenery. All the set pieces and all that kind of stuff is just so meticulous. You mm-hmm. know, it works really well. And you understand the small jokes. You know, imagination and real life mixes a bit.
Yeah.
And they go back to the past, like the Don Quixote time, you know, so everybody is wearing costumes in those imaginative sequences. But all of a sudden, Terry Gilliam has introduced that this crew that is recording the film is having a costume party. Surprise, surprise, right? In a castle.
I gotta see this, man. I gotta see this. I was telling you the other day that I was hoping to do the film.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good for us to that we could do it. But I was talking about The Fisher King, which is one of my favorites from way mm-hmm. back when. Haven't seen it for a long time. Really want to go there again. But
that is the one movie I was thinking about the most. Watching this film,
really,
because it deals with a little bit of the same subject matter. Because Don Quixote, I mean, he's fighting imaginative dragons, and the sword, you know, and
imagined dragons, probably,
yes,
imaginative dragons,
okay, yeah, it's true.
Sorry, I couldn't thank let you get away
thank
with
you,
that. One.
Thank you for correcting me, but. But, you know, it's the same kind of stuff that Robin Williams goes through in The Fisher King.
I really hope it's as good as I remember it, because I wasn't thinking about film at the level I am now, way back when. But
yeah,
it just completely got me back then.
Yeah.
Well.
But, you know, some of the really fun stuff with Terry Gilliam films are usually these very small details that are only in the frame for like 2 seconds. And you can just imagine Terry Gilliam laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
You know, watching that one thing. And one of those scenes is like two kind of like these kind of security guards, like FBI agents, like dark suits and sunglasses riding together on a horse. Right in the
that sounds of funny actually.
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing, you know, and it's just it's for 2 seconds. They've definitely set it up to be there, and it was just quite hilarious.
Cool.
You know, like all those things where Don Quixote is imagining something else than what's actually happening, and you're seeing like this mix of what's going on. That is really funny, but ultimately it's kind of a mess.
Okay.
There is this one scene in particular that I feel describes the movie quite well. It's a dialogue scene. It's very straightforward. It's Adam Driver and a woman who are talking together. But the camera work here is so strange, because they're changing lenses all the time. So you get a very wide shot, almost like GoPro fisheye kind of shot of the woman. Mm. Then back to Adam Driver and like this close-up portrait lens with nice blur in the background. Then you go back to like the same kind of shot of her, like a portrait, like close to the face.
But with a different lens.
Yeah. And then it goes back to like a wide shot and different kind of color schemes, you know, like you can see that the colors are kind of off in this one scene, whether you're using the one camera or the other camera, it seems like it's
and it's definitely the same scene, and there's no switch between times or timelines or anything like that.
That's what you're questioning yourself a little bit about, right? Like mm-hmm. are Are you trying to do something?
Or is it just a mistake?
Different here? I mean, or is it just a mistake? Or is it just because the whole shoot has been chaotic? Because you don't quite know what you really want, but what you like, but you know that you want to make it confusing, or you know you want to make it like really weird.
Yeah.
And that one scene, it was probably like 1 minute, but you were just taken aback, you know?
All right.
With how it was moving around.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Ultimately, I really appreciated it for what it was. I love that Terry Gilliam finally made it, but it was very much like an in-joke, you know? Like, I've been following this movie probably also for the past 20 years, something like that. And it's finally out. And of course, I know stuff about the process, and therefore you like it a little bit better. Elin was absolutely bored out of her mind, and couldn't understand that she had to sit here and watch this movie when we were out.
So your rating as well is 3 stars for Terry Gilliam. Yeah. That's you would have to think that if it were some other director that actually made this, you wouldn't give it 3 stars. You would give it 2 stars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably.
All right.
Probably. There's a lot that you take with you as baggage, you know, with Terry Gilliam. But, you know, he is just an uneven guy. You never know what you get. And he's also uncompromising. So sometimes you get his weird ideas. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it resonates with you. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of these kinds of films. You know, it might resonate with people, you know.
I am extremely excited to see it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I would advise you to track it down.
Let's put The Fisher King somewhere high on the list of things we need to watch if we go back to the back catalog, like we're doing today.
Yeah,
yeah,
like we do today. So,
yeah,
now that we got that out
so
of the way.
So we got that out. Okay. I was excited to hear.
What have you been watching?
Well, I want to mention some TV because it's, mostly because you haven't really watched it, and you should. Mm-hmm. It's Big Mouth on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I have no opinion about the animation. It doesn't really, that's not the thing about it that is good.
No.
And it's a bit uneven at times, but, well, it's uneven.
It's very much dealing with puberty, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like prepubescent / puberty kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. And it's so, so could not have been made like 30 years ago because it's so explicit. And it's so funny, man. It is so fucking funny. Yeah.
Okay.
also, I've been kind of continuing my education, my film education. I'm self-taught, as you know.
Yes.
I'm trying just
getting
to
one, one movie at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been fascinated by the French New Wave since we kind of touched upon that in France over a year ago. So this week I watched two Truffaut films and one Jean-Luc Godard film. And
400 Blows?
The 400 Blows,
yeah.
Which is not about capital punishment, by the way.
No.
No, it actually translates like that, but it's mm-hmm. about... It translates something like I can't remember. It's something like up to no good or something like that.
Yeah, yeah?
But it's not capital punishment at all.
No.
That was surprisingly even. Can I say even?
Even.
Yeah, that movie, because I was expecting something, because it's part of the French New Wave, and I watched it after I watched Breathless, and That's I think I gave it 5 stars. Breathless. I gotta check, but that for me is like punk rock heaven. It's great,
mm-hmm.
Really fucking good. And yeah. No, it's 4.5.
I have to watch that one.
It's 4.5 for me, but yeah. You know, Breathless. It's kind of a good name for it because it's so. It's like it's so cool, the pacing of it and of course all these new things, especially the jump cuts, you know. Yeah. that's what it's famous for, and mm-hmm. It's just so fucking punk rock,
like Breathless.
Yeah, the Breathless. Yeah. Yeah,
and that was not the one you watched right
so
now.
So I was
right?
No, I watched it this week. I watched it this week, okay, but I was talking about the 400 Blows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After watching Breathless, I was expecting something to that effect or more. But mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If Breathless is like punk rock, I mean, the 400 Blows is like Vivaldi or something.
Yeah.
It's smooth. I said mm-hmm. even maybe smooth is better.
Yeah.
But it has some of the stuff like the freeze frames and especially that famous scene towards the end. I recommend it. It's really, really good, but it's very
I
different.
I watched it a long time ago.
Yeah,
and yeah, I loved it at the time, but actually, right now, I can't remember much other than it was about a boy. You know,
it was about a boy. Yeah, it's yeah. It's a, actually as a parent, it's really interesting because he kind of has no chance. His parents are idiots. And the boy does really well acting. And actually a part of a set of films, I think it's 4 films, about the character made by Truffaut. Yeah. And I actually watched one of the other ones, which is called Stolen Kisses, 1968. The 400 mm-hmm. Blows is 1959. Because I wanted to see, because I was interested in seeing how you would do that. And I mean, it's not nearly as good, but it was fun. 3 stars, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Breathless and the 400 Blows are really up there.
Yeah.
And you gotta watch it, man. You gotta, mm-hmm. if you want to know about stuff. And it turns out it was great for me to watch them this week because we're doing Goodfellas.
Okay.
Yes. It's all connected, man. It's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's all
400
connected.
Blows.
Yes. And well, okay. Breathless. More.
Breathless. Yeah. Okay.
But
okay, with the freeze frames.
Well, with the some stuff. Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Okay. Well,
and
we'll see.
So that's those 3 films, and yeah. I also watched The Departed, the Scorsese film from 2006, which I am just gonna talk about later when we do Goodfellas.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it. I think for me,
okay,
been prolific. It's been great.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
So anything else from you?
I'm sorry that I can't comment too much more on 400 Blows at least since I watched it.
And you haven't seen Breathless.
No, I think I've seen like some of it again.
Yeah.
You know, it's back to that time when all I did was try to watch movies and some of them just became this blur,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And some stuck with you. That's how it goes.
I guess.
I do have something else, but I'm thinking maybe we should just move into Goodfellas.
That sounds good to me.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Never rat on your friends, and always keep your mouth shut.
It meant being somebody in the neighborhood that was full of nobodies.
Oh, you broke your cherry!
Hey, Mom, what do you think?
You look like a gangster.
That was a clip from Goodfellas, the 1990 mob life in New York. epic masterpiece from director Martin Scorsese. Well, at least according to some people. maybe not everybody. But it tells the story of classic. Henry Hill. Actually a true story. And how he came up in the, New York crime circuit mob, really. But it wasn't really a made man anyways, but it's still a mob.
But he would never be able to, according to the film.
No. No, according to the film, yes. Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, I think that's...
That's basically what happens.
That's
right?
Basically what we're dealing with here. And you noticed maybe that I took a shot at Rune there because apparently he doesn't rate it as high as I do. So,
or Rune. As most people do, actually.
Well, yeah, that's true, actually. But yeah. I hate to be part of the majority, you know, but still, I just love it. But anyway, so. Well, I'm not going
You don't want to ask me why
I'm not going to ask that right away, but it's just curious to me that you don't rate it higher.
You know, it's hard to live up to expectations of a cult classic.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you've watched it before. You've seen it
many years ago, and I didn't really remember it anyway. So
okay,
I watched it last night. It's fresh for me now
because it's not very memorable. No joke, joke. That was a little joke.
It's the second beer time.
Yeah. All right. I've also watched it before, but I've never sat down to watch the whole thing like at one go.
Well, it is so, 2.5 hours.
So this was the first. Yeah. Yeah. And it is long. this was just the first time I actually sat down, watched the whole thing from start to finish. In two sittings though. I had to break it up. So it might taint my view,
which somehow
because
question,
it's the first time.
Yeah? Which begs the question, can you actually rate a film when you take two sittings?
Well, can you?
Well, I took the 400 blows in three sittings, so I shouldn't say anything. But
you know, when you have kids, then that's the name of the game.
Is, yeah.
You know, recently we started... trying not to drink coffee, and that's a killer for watching movies in the evenings.
Yeah,
we're back on coffee now. Now it goes better. It's better.
Okay,
now.
Yeah. You quit cold turkey?
Yeah, just like from one day to the other.
Damn.
But now I'm back.
Headaches?
Yeah. You get headaches and all that kind of stuff.
I know. I quit one time, and I had headache for 7 days.
Yeah. But it wasn't that bad this time, actually, because I'm keeping it at a low level. I don't drink coffee after 3 o'clock, for instance, and I try to keep it under like 3 cups a day. So there you go. That was a side note.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I add to that side note?
Yeah. Yes. Sure.
I don't drink coffee after 3, usually, and I keep them like 4 cups a day, four double espressos, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still quite a lot of caffeine, I'm thinking.
It helps.
Yeah, and I'm also just thinking, I'm just squeezing all of that caffeine into before 3.
Yeah.
And then you get that one extra cup just before 3, just because, I mean, you know you can't do it afterwards. And does that really make a difference?
I don't know. So, let's jump
anyway,
in. Henry Hill.
Yes.
What do you think?
Henry Hill.
Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta. He always wanted to be a gangster.
Ray Liotta?
No.
Henry Hill?
That was a quote from
It's an actual quote from Henry Hill, so...
Yeah, yeah.
This is based on a book written by that guy, Pileggi, who wrote the script with Scorsese.
Scorsese. Mm-hmm.
And the script, one of the many, many fantastic things about this film... I don't know if it really matters to me that it's based on a true story. I didn't, you know, research the true story or if it's actually
if it holds true.
It doesn't. I don't care about that actually. So, but
yeah, to me, it doesn't seem like. I mean, it might be based on a true story, and it might also be the real story. But you know, you also have this weird thing in the movie that the narrator changes throughout the film. So
you think that's weird? I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean it's a
that switch back and forth.
Yeah, but
and it actually has a good female role.
You think?
I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Lauren Bracco is very good. I mean, I guess we can talk about the actors and performances later, but oh my god, I can't think of a better cast, the performances as a whole in a film after seeing it this last night. I just can't think of it. It's absolutely fantastic for performances all the way through.
It really is.
They really
set the scene, and it seems genuine. It seems like these people are the people they're portraying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it has this lived-in feel.
Uh-huh.
I think that the whole movie, because all the characters feel true, and the setting and the food they eat, the family relations and all that kind of stuff. You just feel like it's real. Yeah.
I actually think much of the family stuff is implied because, well, all of us, we've seen The Godfather and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we know about the La Familia and all that crap. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not that heavy on the family, this. It is heavy on the community. That,
yeah,
it's very specifically narrated that they keep to themselves and there are no outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
But the Italian family, not so much.
No, I got a sense of this family quite a bit, and due to the feast they were having together, and it was all like it was an exclusive club. Yeah, but once you were in, and you had that Pauly guy.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot of Paulies and Petes in this film.
That then, was so funny. Then that scene when when she was talking about like the wedding and
mm-hmm.
they were like, what did she say? Like 15 Peters and Pauls, something like that.
Exactly. but the head of the family. Pauly. Yeah. You knew that he was the
of course. Yeah.
Head,
but he doesn't
and
really flex.
Everybody wanted his approval and everybody was intimidated by him.
Yeah.
And he's introduced in a really good way of just being this like caring but menacing kind of person
who doesn't like and, phones
yeah
it's all and, one-on-one with Pauly
yeah so yeah so that is set up really well yes
okay and, throw me some of that stuff you didn't like.
I'd rather just say a little bit about what I actually liked.
Okay.
And that is the camera stuff. You know, it's beautifully shot.
Agree.
And one thing that really stands out is, I mean, you have the freeze frames, which I'm lukewarm on those.
They actually have a specific purpose, wouldn't you say? Kind of a shift.
To extend the narration.
Well, a shift in the story, you know.
Yeah.
He knows this is about to happen. Things change. There's a freeze frame. It accentuates the what's about to happen.
Is it always like it's also freeze frames of just like close-ups of people, There's quite a few freeze frames throughout the movie. I think it's very cool if it's only freeze frames whenever something switches in the story, then I haven't paid too much attention or like enough attention to that.
Yeah, I think that's the idea from the director. Yeah.
All right. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But what I noticed was these long shots, you know,
tracking
long
shot, takes. The famous yes. tracking shot.
Famous stuff, you know. The first one I really noticed was the introduction to all the gangsters in the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you also get the narration that is actually very good, where you get all the names of the people and you just get 2 seconds of each person's like quirk, you know.
Yeah.
Especially what was his name?
Jimmy the last Two Times.
One, like Jimmy Two
Jimmy
Times.
Jimmy Two yeah. Times. Yeah, he says
and,
things
and
twice.
Then he says things twice. Yeah. You know, that was a very funny scene, and it was also very well done how the camera just moved through the bar and you got those people.
Cool. Very cool.
All the time. Yeah. But in particular, you have this one scene when Henry is courting his wife, or like wife to be, future wife, some say. And you get out of a car with them across the street from a club, and you just go with them through the line, through across the street, into the cellar, into the bar, into this club, like the Copacabana club. And you also get the introduction to like how Henry Hill knows a lot of people, and they come and interact with him, and finally they get to sit down at this table and start listening to music. And it's a perfect introduction to how she, you know, his date is being swept away by him knowing all these people. And you also see the transition of her thinking he's just a regular dude to being, okay, he's definitely involved with
a high up construction worker then.
yeah, quote unquote construction worker. Yeah. And it's also a very good line there with like, I'm into construction, and it's like, yeah, but don't really seem the type. And at that moment, you know that she understands what he's doing, but she accepts it, and she's with him.
Yeah,
you know?
She has her eyes open. She knows
what's going on. Yeah, and how they interact with him. And that whole shot is beautifully shot. You know, it's a completely hard thing to pull off. And it works perfectly.
Well, they did it eight times. Beautiful.
Eight times.
Eight takes.
Yeah.
And like so many beautiful things in this world, it just came by accident. They were supposed to shoot it. They wanted to shoot it going in the front, but weren't allowed for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah. So they had to do it from the back, and they go through the corridors it comes out, like you say, this perfect introduction to the glamour of being a wise guy, you know?
Yeah. But also how, like, wise guys are coming from the back, you know? I mean, they didn't earn it in the traditional sense.
Yeah, true.
So you have that going under that scene. And I think that is very clever. But this is why you shouldn't always read and know stuff about production of movies, because then you realize that some things just happen as a happy coincidence, and you start reading too much into it. But you know, it all works out. You know,
well, it's left in, and
it's left in. Yeah,
it's one of those masterstrokes, like after the fact, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
That defines the film. It's that scene, it's that shot. And everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene, but also the one scene with Joe Pesci where he's telling a joke, and Ray Liotta is saying, "You're a funny guy."
Yeah, you're a funny guy.
You know, what do you mean I'm funny?
Do I amuse you?
Yeah,
that's
you know, and you know, I've seen that scene so many times, and when it came up, I was like, I mean, this is a great scene, and it goes from this really happy family, you know, like friends talking, having fun together, maybe a little bit over exaggerated, and then it just becomes menacing. It becomes like really tense, and you know that Joe Pesci is just like a loaded gun,
yeah,
you know, or like,
you know, that
what do you say, someone who can really snap at any moment.
After the fact, you don't even know if he's joking. You don't know if he's joking.
No,
but let's stay on Pesci. I mean, for me, he's the most that I can think of right now menacing character I've ever seen in a film. You have no idea where you have him, what's going to happen, and you're quite happy when he's taken out. I was quite happy with that, actually.
Yeah, and you were rooting for it for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you really wanted them to just deal with him.
Yeah.
And you even have a person saying to Paulie at one point, like,
what am I going to...
Maybe you should just... Yeah,
wouldn't be a bad idea.
You know? And Paulie was just like, I mean, you don't say that kind of stuff. And you don't... I don't know if you realized what happened to the guy suggesting it.
Mm.
But... He
got taken to the cleaners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a nice, actually nice insight into the actual works of wise guys. Because Henry Hill is suggesting it to the restaurant owner to just go to Paulie and see if he wants to be a partner. Mm-hmm. And Paulie is acting like, me? Really? And they're like, yeah, man. And then, of course, he's just... He takes the club over and just cleans it out from the inside and just then ends up burning it down.
Yeah.
It's actually a nice incident of how they used to do it. I mean, today they would probably use it for laundering money, but back then it was just smash and grab, really.
Mm-hmm. Get whatever you can and get out.
Yeah. And then clean up on the insurance money when you burn it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we like the camera then. What about music?
Yes. I love this music.
Uh-huh.
I love the music. I don't know if I love it in this movie,
right.
But I love the music. You know, it's music like this that I could put on like one afternoon, you know.
You're not sure if it's fitting or I mean, was some of it diegetic, or was it just... A track?
I feel like it's a little bit too particular. It's a little bit too, you know, specific. I connect these tracks and these songs to other things as well. And
other
it's
films?
Cool songs. It's good. Other films, other situations. And it's very popular songs.
Yeah.
At least in my mind. And I'm not always like, it seems like it's taking more of the focus than what's going on, in the scenes. And, I enjoyed it, but I was also a little bit, I would like it to go a little bit more in the back, you know, and maybe have one or two of these kind of moments where you really remember the song, but. It was as if sometimes you had like montages kind of with one song first where you see something and someone is narrating a top of it, and then it stops and another song comes on and you get another narration on top of it, and it just went on like that. And
I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I actually don't agree with you that it's too much or over the top or anything like that. I actually think it adds to the pacing, because the pacing is quite frantic. Yeah? I think so. It's 2.5 hours of like really quick pacing. So I think it helps with that. And just to get back to the camera bit, I forgot what I was going to say. It's all connected, man. I mean, Scorsese was... he was really into the French New Wave.
Yeah.
And he was determined to use that stuff, all that freeze frames and jump cuts and the fast editing and all that, which he does to great effect in this film. I mean, the editing alone, beautiful. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that part about it.
Yeah.
What gets me is really the whole narration. And I'm always sitting and thinking, why don't you show these things rather than talk about them? And, you know, I start to get tired of listening to a narration on top of, scenes. And one in particular that I found particularly superfluous was the first time we get the narration of his date, or like
Karen.
his wife. Mm. She's actually saying exactly what the scene conveys. You know, instead of just having the scene play out as it does, because the acting is impeccable, then you put on another layer of the character in the scene telling us what was going on. And you could definitely see what was going on right there in that moment. And I'm just like, don't rely so much on narration, because it makes you lose focus on what you're watching, and it makes you also not be able, like, you're not able to make your own interpretation of what you're seeing, because you always have the explanation on top. It might not be the explanation that you should get out of it, like, you can get this contradiction in the narration and what you're seeing, but it's just, I mean,
I know the scene you're talking about.
Yeah, with that one. But also in general for other scenes, like, sometimes I just want to make up my own goddamn mind, right? Instead of having someone tell me.
Well, then watch something else, happening. Man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I will. No, but you know, that's what I'm... That's what I'm...
That's the your main with. Beef with this.
That's probably my main beef.
Okay.
And along those lines, then, like, none of these characters are very likable. When you get down to it, none of them are, like you said, like Joe Pesci, you're just rooting for him to get killed as soon as possible. And with all the other guys, I couldn't care less if one or the other actually died or got whacked, you know? Because I don't care.
I disagree with the characterization there, but first on the narrating, I totally respect your opinion there. It did not bother me at all. I was like more thinking about the shift, which I thought was cool. And I thought it added to the female role. This is me coming off The Departed, which I rewatched this week, or actually the day before I watched Goodfellas. And I remember at the time I had got into a little fight with one of my friends, which we saw it together. And I was like, meh, it's not that good. Actually, meh, I don't care for it that much. And, I'm actually quite happy I watched it the night before I watched Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not good. It's 3 stars out of, it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
It has some good build up and it has some moderately good acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some stuff, but it has a lot of stupid stuff as well. And just seeing it the night before really helped me make up my mind about Goodfellas. Because you can see yeah. how this is a movie that got 4 Oscars in a much better gate at the box office than Goodfellas, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. 5 times better or something like that. And yeah. Goodfellas is so much better. I have yet to find something I dislike about Goodfellas. Actually, I don't. The narration, okay. Like I said, I get that. I understand. It's a stylistic choice. I am on board with it. And getting back to mm-hmm. The Departed, my actual point there was that there was a female role and there was a love triangle, which was silly. And the female role was, you got the feeling it was there because we need a female role. Let's mm-hmm. make it a love triangle. Actually, The Departed is a remake from a Japanese or Hong Kong film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just annoying.
Yeah.
Actually,
internal
when you think
affairs,
about it,
right?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Internal affairs. Yeah. I think the Hong Kong film is called.
And it's just one of those things that annoys me about the whole American Oscar thing, and it's rated so highly, The Departed, it doesn't deserve it. No. I don't mean to like diss Scorsese because he's a genius. He did,
but I mean he can
two 5-star films for me, which is Taxi Driver and Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
No,
but
you can always make missteps. Oh, and this was a remake as well. I haven't watched the whole of The Departed either.
This was a remake as well?
No. I haven't watched the whole of The Departed, and The Departed was a remake.
Yeah.
I watched some of the other Scorsese movies, and I mean, definitely Taxi Driver is the one I would champion of his films.
For me, that's these two. I mean, I'm going to watch Casino soon, hopefully. But
yeah,
but what people say about her is that film is that it's not.
it's not
good for us. But it's trying to be, but it's not.
Yeah.
But there you go. We have
but
a
I remember.
Nice female role, a good female role, like a meaty role. And she does great. What I wanted to say about characterization is that it's, for me, it's both subtle and just like a sledgehammer, you know?
Mm?
No?
Like how?
Like a sledgehammer. Like, you really, he just like beats it into you.
Like stereotypical?
No.
Or like
no.
just
like Pesci, you know?
Yeah.
But it's still... Many of the characters are subtle for me, like Robert De Niro character, mm-hmm. Jimmy Conway.
I like him.
It's really nicely and subtly built, mm-hmm. and of course De Niro is fantastic as always.
Yeah,
and Leota really surprised me because my perception of him is basically he's born to play a bad guy. But he was he was actually, and you said before there was no likable characters. I actually came away kind of liking him. Henry Hill.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe. I always felt like, I mean, he's never doing anything.
I mean, he's not killing people.
He's kind of just a freeloader a little bit. Yeah, which he's along for the ride.
It goes against every mob show or film you've ever seen because they always ask you to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you kind of in, and he's not.
Yeah. At least he's not shown killing anyone.
No.
You know,
he's not. It,
so
it doesn't really say. Probably he did in real life. I don't know.
But if it's his story also, and like he was, you know, then he's like, I never did anything.
He's in on the production, actually. He,
you know?
He contributes. Let's just say like, I didn't kill anyone.
That's not quite right. I was just standing over there looking at it. And
I was on the lookout.
Yeah, I was a little... I was always getting the lookout spot. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole characterization for me is just outstanding. And the acting going with it is just fantastic.
Yeah.
The art department, just that scene you were talking about with Karen Hill getting to know the mobster wives.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, the art department, the costumes and makeup, which I kind of...
Yeah.
Put under the art department. How good was that? Oh my God.
I mean, there's nothing to put your finger on. You know, stylistically, this is a
triumph.
Triumph. Yeah. Yeah. But that being said, they're going very much with this cool factor. Like in the style and everything. And
really?
You know, I could, yeah. I mean, you know. I mean, some of the shots, I mean, just thinking of when Joe Pesci gets shot, right? I mean, you have that overhanging thing on a tiled floor and like the camera is hanging on top and you have the tile floor and he's being shot and the blood is like splatter. Like it's glorifying violence in a particular way.
I don't think so. I very much disagree with you there.
You know, I like that it's like all the night shots are always in the, like it's always lit by taillights, red taillights in order to convey this sense of blood and danger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very well done, but it's just, I mean, it's also very stylistic, you know, and sometimes like I was kept at an arm's length with this film because of the style. I liked it. I thought it was very well done, but detrimental to to how well it was done. It also kind of made me feel like I was not really in it and it was not so real. Like they start off by saying it's a true story and everything, but it seems so created still. That it keeps me a little bit away. Like it keeps me lukewarm at best.
Okay, you know? I have to answer this now.
Yeah.
Right away while I remember it actually. I wrote it down. The violence.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree there. It's not glorifying it at all for me. It's actually the opposite. It's a very matter of fact. It's not gory. There's actually a reason for that. There's less blood than there should have been because of the rating.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed to get it to be R-rated, so there was a few blood frames left out.
Okay.
Yeah. But it doesn't. There's no circus about the violence. There's just a matter of fact, people getting shot or actually hit over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's not glorifying. There's nothing cool about what he's doing. I mean, there's, you knock someone out and then you give him 10 extra punches. It's just horrible. There's nothing glorified about that for me. And the cool you mentioned, I don't think so because, well, that scene with the wives, they were so far removed from anything resembling cool. They were so far removed from classic. It was just chasing the fashion of the day in a kind of a horrible way. The art department, when Henry Hill moved in with this, well, he set up an apartment for his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I was thinking about that scene when he got a new house when he had started the coke business with his wife, and they had this new place when he had there was like a fireplace or a bar behind the wall.
Yeah.
It was just so kitsch, horribly, awfully terrible that it was actually look into the minds of these people. And these people are, well, uneducated. They're just rich. Mm-hmm. They're new rich. Mm-hmm. And they don't know anything about style. They just follow what somebody tells them, and it's just terrible. Mm-hmm. So it's not cool for me.
No, I mean, it's more like the way things are shot, I'm saying, is cool. Like, the characters are not cool. Like, that one scene with the wives, I mean, you also have the narration on top saying they just, like, mix and match, like, different kinds of styles. It's just not right, you know?
And that actually, I agree with you, and that actually makes your point better about that scene and the narration. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's more the way the camera is used, the way it frames the action. It makes it cool. But there's also a point to that. You know, like, the whole first part of the movie is about how cool is it to be a gangster, at least from the perspective of Henry Hill.
Absolutely.
And then
that's by choice.
It's totally by choice.
Yeah, glamorous side of it.
I really like how they structured the film also, with starting with this really violent scene with Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro and Ray Liotta beating up this guy, or like killing him in the trunk. And then you get that long period of, like, it's so great being a gangster. You have to beat up a guy here and there, but it's basically just great. And then you get back to the scene where they actually have to kill him again, you know, and you just see that is the catalyst for all the shit that starts to happen in their lives. But still, you know, the framing the violence I just feel like it's like that. Like, you have the one scene with Samuel Jackson, you know?
Yeah.
Being whacked also. I like using these gangster
mob
terms, you know, he got whacked.
Yeah.
And it's a quick thing, yeah. But you have a lot of blood. You have it very stylistically set up. Like, sometimes I would have liked to just, like, I don't know, you know, but make it a little bit less nice. Like the shot with Samuel Jackson being shot in the head and have the blood splatter over his bed and, like, he's falling forward and stuff. That one shot is beautiful. I would like some of that stuff not to be beautiful in order for it not to be cool, because it looks cool.
Like, you know, him begging for his life or something like that? Or
huh?
Like him begging for his life? Would you?
No. Have it quick. Have it like that, you know? But make it look... Like, don't make it... Like, don't set it up so it looks cool. Like, you could have made many choices. You could have the close-up of Joe Pesci just, like, doing it. And then he's lying there, you know? You could do... Like, make many choices here. But you have the camera behind Joe Pesci, behind Samuel Jackson, and everything is lined up perfectly. It's, like, stylistically, it's very nice, you know? And by that I mean it glorifies the violence, because it's beautiful, you know, like you see the end result, like the picture of it is beautiful in that way. You get what I mean? That, like, when Joe Pesci is being whacked as well, you know, it's also beautiful. It's a beautiful scene, you know, but it removes the horror of being killed, You know,
yeah,
it's like whenever someone is killed, you're just like, oh, he died, and that looked good.
But isn't that actually what they did?
See, that's what I'm doubting. You know, I think this is business. You know, and they just go in and they say like, boom, done, out. You know, and they don't try to frame it in any sort of way. You know, like I don't know. You know, but it's that's what I mean with the cool factor, and that's why I'm thinking it has such a cult status, because a lot of people who are watching this film are just like, whoa, I mean, it looks great. It's about like the mob, and it has that first part that is really, well, glorifying the status of it. Mm. And then you have all the violence that is well choreographed, well done, you know, and it's, yeah.
These people do this for a living, you know, so.
Yeah.
So that's maybe what they're showing as well. But you've seen the Sopranos, right?
Sure. Yeah. I watched the first and second episode, I think, and I know Leonard Cohen did the intro.
Yeah. so many. This Sopranos is actually inspired by this film.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just mentioned it now because... It is a bit neat, like you say, or cool, or like business-like, how they do this. And I think that's... And you have limited amount of time to explore people's feelings about it. I know you're talking about the how they frame the shot, maybe.
Yeah,
I know,
it's more like film technical.
Yeah. But in The Sopranos, you actually get into the feelings and anxieties and whatnot of these people. And I just realized how much Sopranos takes from Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. A few actors, like, yeah, Pussy, you have Pauly. Of course, Lauren Bracco is Jennifer Melfi in The Sopranos.
Mm.
The whole restaurant thing feels familiar.
Yeah.
Phil Leotardo is the guy who Tommy whacks there. You know, with a knife in the trunk.
Yeah.
Michael Imperioli is Spider. You know, no idea?
Don't know these people. Don't know them. But somebody
it
will.
It is an inspiration to Sopranos. And he basically, David Chase has basically said, it's the kind of the well we come to for The Sopranos. And I think I read there was like 27 actors from that film appeared on The Sopranos.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's also something that it has going for it, because you just know these characters. You know them because they're always showing up as these mobster types in film. You know, it's interesting. And that's why I'm also interested to see The Irishman, you know, the new film coming up by Scorsese also, which will be released on Netflix, that has all the same characters. It's going to be...
We have some Netflix stuff coming up. We have that Coen film coming up as well.
Yeah.
On Netflix.
Also that. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Interesting indeed. Yeah. no, but... Yeah.
But for me, mostly it's the script. How it's all framed. How the script and the... maybe the music adds to the pacing of it. It's like...
Mm-hmm.
Frenetic. It's just 2.5 hours and you never ever get bored.
Well, it's 2.5 hours and you're looking at your watch a few times and thinking, when is it going to end?
No.
that's so funny. How we can have such different opinions?
The film. It's funny as well.
There are funny things. Yeah, there's funny scenes in it.
I mean, laugh out loud scenes is the one we've already mentioned. Pesci in the restaurant and I amuse you. And then the Peter Paul and Marie.
Yeah, that's good. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have the guys who are using a lot of money that they just stole. Where Robert De Niro is really angry with them. It's fun.
The guy on the white Cadillac, was it? Cadillac? Yeah, he was called Johnny Roast Beef. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Johnny Roast Beef.
Heard him. Yeah.
Just the names, man.
The names are good. Yeah. But it also just becomes so comical, or like it removes me, you know, for feeling anything for them, because it's just like a joke a little bit.
Yeah.
And
you
know, one point, like, about the violence again. I wanted to bring up, like, this movie by David Cronenberg, I think, called History of Violence, with Viggo Mortensen. I didn't quite like the film like that, but one thing that stood out to me was the violence. It's executed so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, like, you know, glorified in that way. It's like the problem is happening now, and then within 5 seconds, it's done. It's not dragged out. They do the same thing here, but there you have the shaky camera. You have like it's frantic. It's like this. Yeah, that was a side note. I thought about that before. Yeah. It was a good.
At the same time, when you say you mentioned two scenes when Tommy gets whacked and and Sam Jackson gets whacked, and
and it's very quick.
It is true. It's nice to say whacked. It's nice to have a reason to say whacked, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, whacked, those means, are really calculated.
It is
murders. You know, it's planned. They know what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, so that it is tidy.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys have to move the body or chop it up or wherever they do. You know.
Yeah. But you're also thinking, I mean, if they can plan it like that, why not do it with less blood? Why splatter blood all over the room with Samuel Jackson, for instance?
I think maybe because these are working class people and they don't know how to mix a lethal injection, maybe?
Maybe.
It's knives and guns.
But they know how to strangle people sometimes.
Yes. You know?
They do that. I mean, they could have just as well done that with Samuel Jackson.
I guess we have to agree to disagree on this thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Just to sum up for me, just to sum up a little bit, I just liked everything about it. It's heavily stylized. I get that. And that's getting a nod to you, I guess, as well. Mm-hmm. But I just, the whole, the characterization, the acting, the music, the script, is just a beauty. It's a beauty. Mm-hmm. And compared to The Departed, it's just outstanding. And the editing and all the whole stylistic look of it is just fantastic. And it's the best mobster movie. I never really cared for the Godfather films.
No.
Up there. I mean, they're good films. I get that. And then the whole La Familia thing. I just don't... It doesn't... I don't place it at the top of the pantheon. This thing feels real. And that maybe is the best recommendation I can give it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with it feeling real to a certain extent. Like at least the situation, the family life, the mob as a whole feels right, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if all the situations feel real, and that makes me at least feel a little bit at length with it. I also have the feeling that the cult classic status of it, like a lot of people really enjoy it for like the style, because the style is cool, to me. And I don't think it's to its it's not it could have been better had it not been so stylistically clean okay. in that regard. But you know, I'll stop raining on this parade. I think it's a very solid film. 3 stars for me, right? But I didn't enjoy watching it in that way.
All right.
Like, despite the beautiful shots mm-hmm. that are in it, you know. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to respectfully disagree with each other here.
I think so.
That's the way to go.
And unfortunately, I'm the one in the minority, according to the ratings of this movie. So
yeah, I don't feel good about that. I don't like to be in the majority.
No.
but I'll take it this time.
Yeah, you need to stand by your guns. And this was what I felt. I'm sorry about it.
I just didn't. It's a 5 stars for me. I have, I think, 13 on Letterboxd. You have 12, I checked.
Yeah. Okay, you checked it.
Yeah, I actually checked it. Because it needs to have something real to get those 5 stars.
Everyone is looking for something different.
For those. Absolutely. You know, so
a perfect movie.
Yeah. I mean,
it's rare.
Yeah. I would never say perfect movie. There's no such thing, I think. But
as perfect as can be.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot what I was gonna say, so I'll just not say it.
So maybe since we're running very long, I think. Yeah.
I think it's time.
Should we start wrapping up? Yeah.
Yes. We have no idea what to do next.
No.
We're in a, I don't know, some dimension where nothing is coming to both our countries at the same time.
Exactly.
So weird.
I don't know what is going on. But we are going to catch up with Utoya, July 22nd, the Paul Greengrass.
Yeah, we should schedule that for next time, probably, along with something else.
It won't be the main feature. No. We'll just touch upon that. Yeah. But we're very interested in seeing how the American take on Utoya would be. I saw the trailer after last time.
Yeah.
And what I noticed mostly was that the killer was shown off the bat.
Yes.
Yeah. Right off the bat. This is what the focus is on. And that's what I enjoyed about the other movie so much, that you never really saw him.
He was not mentioned. He's not given any kind of a platform there.
No. So
it doesn't look good.
if you're looking up, you know, this case and everything, you on YouTube, for instance, you see his trial where he's taking over when he's being sentenced to make some propaganda talk, you know, and this is what he really wants, you know. So it's great that he's not getting that. And that one scene that you can find on YouTube if you search for it will definitely be in the Paul Greengrass version. I am positive about it. It'll be much more that kind of stuff.
It would be Greengrassian, wouldn't it?
I guess so.
Maybe I'm judging Paul Greengrass too harsh after Jason Bourne. I don't know.
I liked the two other Jason Bournes, you know, Supremacy and Ultimatum. They're all right.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Anyway, but we don't really know what we're going to choose as our main feature. So if any of you have an idea, please write in. And also about the Goodfellas. I mean, please let me know why Goodfellas is such a great movie.
Told you, I told you.
yeah, you already told me, but like, I need more
convincing. I would like to hear if some people are actually on Rune's side here. That would be interesting. But still, I have not been convinced. I still haven't found anything wrong with it.
No.
That's my point with the five. There's nothing wrong with it for me. And Rune did not convince me.
No. I wasn't intending on convincing you. I'm just saying this is what didn't work for me.
See,
anyway.
Yeah, you and me, we can actually disagree and be happy about just disagreeing, not having to convince each other about its merits of our own opinion.
You shouldn't do that. Yeah. You shouldn't force other opinions on, or like your opinions on other people.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you have any comments about that or any other takes on Goodfellas, please write us at theconversationpodcast.net or go to our website, theconversationpodcast.net, you know. I didn't say the email address. The
email address is...
I said the website twice, so that is theconversationpodcast.net.
Yes.
But if you want to write us, do it at contact@theconversationpodcast.net.
We love to get some feedback, safe to say.
Yeah. And you're also welcome to write us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, anywhere you like, but contact@theconversationpodcast.net.
And we'll get back to you if you're looking for us in podcatchers, just write the Unnordic Film Podcast. We'll pop right up.
That'll suffice. Yeah. All right. Thank you for paying attention for what is probably like 1.5 hours or something like that.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Yeah. And we'll see you next time.
Bye now.